This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
On the program today, the central bank known as the ECB and interest rates, the company known as FB and privacy, and the community known as LGBTQ and their money. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday, the 7th of March today. Good as always to have you along, everybody. With the caveat that foreign exchange trading can involve significant risk of loss, a word as we get going here about the dollar-euro trade today. Should you be planning a trip over there? The macroeconomic gods are smiling on you. A euro can be had at the moment for just $1.12, the cheapest the single currency has been since 2017. What gives, Kai, I hear you ask? Well, first of all, thanks for asking, but the European Central Bank is what gives. The ECB did a completely unexpected about-face this morning, promising not to raise interest rates at least through the end of this year and saying it is going to make more loans to European banks. Marketplace's Nancy Mosher-Ganser explains what's going on.
The European Central Bank said today that the economies of the eurozone, the 19 countries that use the euro, will grow by just around 1% this year, partly due to the trade tensions between the U.S. and China. Mark Ostwald is chief economist at ADM Investor Services. He says if the Chinese economy slows further as the trade talks with the U.S. drag on, that's bad news because Europe exports so much to China.
Everything from cars down to more simple consumer goods, as well as exporting a lot of machinery to China.
Ostwald says China will buy less from Europe if its economy seizes up. President Trump's threat to slap a tariff of up to 25% on cars from Europe is also weighing on the eurozone economy. And then there are zombie loans, loans eurozone banks made to failing companies that are still on their books. Danielle DiMartino Booth is a former Dallas Fed advisor.
Because they haven't been written off, you're not freeing up the ability, the bandwidth, in order to make fresh loans that therefore spur fresh economic growth.
The European Central Bank is trying to change that by making cheap long-term loans to banks. Andrew Kenningham is chief Europe economist at Capital Economics. He's not sure this aggressive new strategy will work.
There's at least a 1 in 4 chance of there being a recession, over the next year or so.
Kenningham says it depends on what happens in the rest of the world. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
With that as backdrop, then, the European Central Bank trying, basically, to figure out which way the winds are blowing, as is the Fed, we should say, we are going to take a step back here and talk big picture, because there are a lot of moving parts out there right now. Brexit, the trade war, North Korea, and a slowing global economy, a lot of stuff. Uncertainty is the word, right? But as uncertain as things might seem today, are they really all that different than they have been in the past? And now that we come to think of it, can there be any such thing as economic certainty anyway? Marketplace's Amy Scott is on that one.
That word uncertainty has come up on this show roughly 150 times just in the 2+ years since President Trump's inauguration. Here's Kai in August 2017.
As long as the rain is still falling, economic uncertainty is the watchword.
Erica Barris last month.
The automobile industry is already facing lots of uncertainty.
And, yep, me last summer.
She says uncertainty over where the trade war is headed could weigh on future growth.
So what? Are things really less predictable than usual? For the long view, I asked Deirdre McCluskey, professor emerita of economics and history at the University of Illinois, Chicago.
Bad things happen. They always have.
It's easy to forget, she says, just how unsettling World War II was, or the rise and fall of communism.
People always think now is more uncertain than before.
That's Nicholas Bloom, an economics professor at Stanford. He co-founded the Economic Policy Uncertainty Index going all the way back to 1900. He says it's true that global uncertainty has spiked recently, what with Brexit and the trade war with China.
But numbers for the U.S. don't look that bad. We're kind of average uncertainty.
Yeah, average. If things seem scary now.
10 years ago was the financial crisis. 15 years ago would have been, say, the Gulf War or, you know, the end of the dot-com boom.
One caveat, the index is based partly on mentions of uncertainty in the press. So there's a risk of a bit of a feedback loop, but it only counts newspapers. So we can say uncertainty as many times as we want. Uncertainty, uncertainty, uncertainty. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Sorry, that one caught me. That was pretty good. On Wall Street today, ixnay on the epi hey uzik may. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. It took him 3,200-something words in a post yesterday and 15 years elapsed corporate time, but Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg has a new vision for his company. It is, quote, privacy-focused. Zuckerberg said he figures the future of life online is, another quote, the digital equivalent of the living room, that is, private, with encrypted messages. And that is a big, big pivot for a company that created what Zuckerberg once called, another quote here, the digital equivalent of a town square. So, what to make of it, and can Zuckerberg make the turn? Ina Fried is the chief technology correspondent at Axios. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kai.
I'm going to jump right in here and ask what I think is the really obvious question. Given this company's performance on privacy to date, why should we believe anything Zuckerberg said yesterday?
I think the general rule of, you know, show, don't tell applies doubly so with Facebook. We'll have to wait and see if their actions match up with their words.
How are they going to make money doing this? Because if he gets all private, it does seem that it takes away a big chunk of their business model, which is collecting all this data and creating a targeted ad environment.
Absolutely. Their current business model doesn't work in a private environment. There are some ways to make money, but they are fundamentally different from the way that Facebook's made money in the past. If, like with WeChat in China, this becomes a way that people do business and their private messaging morphs into commerce and other things, there are some money-making opportunities. But Facebook has built one of the largest digital advertising companies in the world, and it's not going to be easy to match that with any other business model.
Yeah, and the catch, of course, is that he built it on, you know, as he has been saying for 15 years, everybody sharing and being public because that's what society wants.
Definitely. And I think of this more as an adjunct, a plan B, than we want to throw away this great money-making thing that we have. Huh. Facebook is so large that it wants to rightly hedge its bets, but I don't think they're really throwing away what they've built.
Why now, do you suppose, Ina, did he do this?
There's a couple reasons, and they're varied. I think that they see a need for additional businesses, and people were going to see them taking the steps to this. There are also some protection benefits of merging their three messaging systems. There could come a day where regulators, whether in the US, Europe, or somewhere else, say, we don't think you should be able to combine these things. And if they integrate them now, that takes that away as a lever. So I think that's part of the timing. And I think they're under a lot of pressure on the privacy front. And this gives them something to tout as saying, look, we're doing this thing that's going to make your life more private, more secure.
There is this axiom about Facebook that their response to whatever problem is presented by society to, or whatever objections, rather, are presented by society and government to whatever Facebook's doing. You know, Facebook's response is, hey, let's do more Facebook, you know?
You know, there's a couple different reactions. One is, let's do more Facebook. One that they've been using a lot in the past year is, I'm sorry. Yeah. The first one in a while that hasn't started with, I'm sorry. So that's a little different. I think they're embracing a general trend in favor of a very Facebook way of doing it. They're saying, You like privacy, you want to be protected, we can do that too. I think a lot of people are reading this as throw away the old. I think this is much more, Here's something else we can do.
Interesting. Ina Fried, she's the chief technology correspondent at Axios. Ina, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Kai.
Who you are, literally who you are, affects how you feel about this economy. That includes gender and race, and sexual orientation. And that last item, sexual orientation and money, basically, is the seed of a new project from the Nancy podcast from WNYC Studios. It's about the LGBTQ experience. They partnered with a polling firm, Morning Consult, to find out how people in the LGBTQ community are feeling about their personal finances and why they feel that way. The series is on this week. It's called Queer Money Matters. Tobin Lowe and Kathy Tu are the hosts of Nancy. It's good to have you both here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Kathy, let's get to the nuts and bolts of what you found. Mm-hmm. LGBTQ people in this population, they just feel differently about money than cis and heterosexual people do.
Yeah, unfortunately, more depressed, more shame. In our survey, we asked people to tell us how they feel when we bring up things about personal finance. And over 50% said that they felt anxiety compared to 41% of the straight cisgender folks. And I mean, there could be a variety of factors that lead to that. Do you want to talk about like having a family, a stable family in our society when just conceiving a child costs like so much more money? Like when you think about all these different milestones in your life, everything ends up costing more and you're earning less. Yeah, I think I fall in that category, anxiety.
Yeah. Tobin, something you said, I guess it was in episode zero, right, which aired last week, or the trailer for this series. You said this economy is basically built, in your experience, it's built for cisgendered and heterosexual people. Explain that a little bit.
Well, I think that personal finance can be difficult for anyone for any number of reasons. But I think a very real thing that came up for me is I looked around at some of my straight cisgender friends, and there was this sort of path for them where they got married, then I would get the Christmas card from them at their house with their kid. And there was an element of it just felt organic and sort of natural to roll into those next steps. And each of those next steps came with some kind of financial bump or a little bit of a tax break, let's say, or something that sort of got you to the next stage. And so one of the things that we found in the series and talking to people, each of those steps come with sort of a complication or a hurdle that queer people have to think about.
Can I do a really quick detour here for a minute
and
talk about verbiage, queer versus gay or LGBTQ? People are going to hear queer and say, wait, what?
Yeah. So obviously the word queer has a lot of different meanings for a lot of different people. We hear all the time actually from older folks who listen to the show that for them it can have a really negative connotation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think for us and for a lot of folks, we're trying to reclaim the word a little bit. And also when we use it on the show especially, we're using it as sort of a shorthand for anyone who identifies as part of the LGBTQIA plus community. It's sort of our shorthand way of saying, you know, this community that identifies as part of
it. And it's not like a debate about how long this acronym can go or how big it should be and who includes and doesn't include. It's literally
how long the acronym goes, right?
I mean,
it's just because it goes.
Yeah.
One of the things that hit me in this series, and I forget where it was the observation by one of your analysts or your experts that gay men make more than all other women, gay, straight, take your pick, and that there is, even within the queer community, there are dynamics that affect how progress is perceived.
Absolutely. I mean, I think a mistake that commonly gets made is talking about the queer community as a monolith. There does seem to be a public assumption that all queer people are better off. And because of things like, well, maybe they don't have kids, maybe they're always on vacation because they have that expendable income.
It's that idea of gay affluence, right?
Exactly. And when you really break that down, I think what a lot of people are imagining is that gay male same-sex couple, which even in the research that we talked about, you know, there's evidence that shows that gay and bisexual men earn 10% less than their straight counterparts.
Right.
But right. even so, like the thing that you're getting at and that we talk about in the series is this nuance of, you know, but if you compare gay men to, for example, women who are in a same-sex relationship, they're both affected by the gender pay gap. Mm-hmm. So they're earning less already. And then it's even, I think, lower and worse for transgender folks.
Right. So the issues that plague society writ large are piled on top of the issues that the issues that society at large are get piled on top of the queer community issues that they have to deal with,
yeah.
that y'all have to deal with, right?
Yeah, definitely.
At the end of the day, this series ends Friday. My guess is that you had incredible response already. What do you want people to get out of this?
I think the most important thing is for people to feel like they are not alone when they feel like a nagging in the back of the head that maybe something's not right. Because that's something that I felt before. Like, why am I working so hard to make this happen when the system doesn't seem built for me? So that's one thing. The other thing is just the power that comes from talking about art issues when it comes to money, I think is very important for us to be able to talk about money, and then we can sort of tackle the obstacle that's in the way.
Well, I'm going to say something that's sort of ironic, given the fact that, full disclosure, I used to work for Marketplace.
But yeah, fair enough.
Money and finance terrifies me. And so
me too sometimes, man.
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah, yeah. It can be a scary thing, and it can be especially a scary thing to talk about, and especially when it involves personal finance. So yeah. I think a big thing we were hoping with this series is that people would feel more comfortable just to talk about the things they were experiencing. And like Kathy was saying, to feel less alone. You know, you're not imagining it. There are ways in which the system is not built for you. Mm-hmm. And so then how do you deal with that?
Yeah.
Right. Tobin Lowe and Kathy too. And a series from their podcast, The Nancy Podcast, from WNYC Studios. Thanks, you two. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Kai.
Thanks, Kai.
Coming up.
It's really challenging to get 5 positive days in a row, which is honestly quite accurate for me in real life.
A game developer who made her virtual reality real. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is off 200 points today, 0.7%, closed to 25,473. The NASDAQ sagged 84 points, 1.1%, 74.21. The S&P 500 off 22 points, 0.8%, 27.48. The grocery chain Kroger tumbled 9.9% today, projected earnings below Wall Street forecasts as it struggles to compete against retail giants like Walmart and Target and Amazon, and you know them. Allergan said a new treatment for depression failed in 3 late-stage studies. Allergan shares dropped on that news, but then recovered, gained 4%. They did. Bonds rose, yield on the 10-year Treasury note fell to 2.64%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out Public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Jennifer Pack, our correspondent in Shanghai, started a two-parter yesterday about birthright citizenship, specifically Chinese couples coming here to have their babies. A lot of those trips are arranged through what are called birth tourism agencies, companies that operate both here and in China, right at the edge of immigration law. In fact, 20 people were arrested here in Southern California earlier this year, charged with visa fraud and money laundering. So here is Jennifer with her second of two stories about the business of families making the trek from Shanghai to the United States to give birth.
Shanghai's Meijiabei agency makes giving birth in the U.S. look like a vacation. In a promotional video, pregnant moms and their husbands cook dinner in a Los Angeles home, where the kitchen alone is bigger than a lot of Shanghai apartments. Eat juicy steaks, stay in a villa, have someone wait on you hand and foot after birth. Meijiabei arranges all of that, plus visas, doctors, and hospitals. Every year, up to 1,000 families use its service to give birth in the U.S., according to the agency's founder, Tom Wong.
These families bring a lot of wealth to the U.S. They'll spend during their short stay, buy property, and maybe send their child back to the U.S. for college.
He says the agency business took off in 2013, partly because of a hit film called Finding Mr. Right. It's about a pregnant woman from Beijing, Jia Jia, who travels to Seattle to give birth. She isn't married. If she were to give birth in China, she would be fined thousands of dollars for being a single mother. But if she travels to the U.S. for the delivery, there's no fine. And she gets to return to China with a status symbol, an American baby.
The film popularized this idea that Chinese parents can get an American passport for their children by spending money.
There's one problem. The pregnant woman lies her way past U.S. immigration.
Why you come to Seattle?
Sleepless in Seattle. You know that? I love that movie. I love it.
That's visa fraud. And it's one of the federal charges against the birth tourism agencies in California that operators coach families to lie about why they came to the U.S. and how long they plan to stay. U.S. prosecutors also allege that the agencies defrauded landlords by not telling them that the apartments were being rented for clients to stay in. Tom Wong says that's not how his agency does business.
We help them use legal channels to obtain a U.S. visa and coach them to pass American immigration by declaring the truth, that they want to give birth in the U.S.
There may be no need to lie. In a statement to Marketplace, a spokesperson for the U.S. consulate in Shanghai said there's no ban on traveling to America for medical purposes, including giving birth. Wang's service costs between $45,000 and nearly $150,000. Mothers generally arrive 2 months before giving birth and leave a month after. The fees are slightly lower at the Gedao Life Agency in Shanghai, starting at $20,000. Founder Zhou Chao says families should see that as an investment in their child's future.
If the child applies for U.S. colleges as a Chinese citizen, the family might spend the same amount as our service costs, or more. But if the child is an American citizen, then it's much cheaper to study in the U.S.
That's because U.S. citizens are eligible for financial aid that isn't available to foreigners. Another selling point, Zhou Chao says, is America's medical care. He's had clients go to the U.S. because China limits couples to 2 children and prohibits screening for gender.
If their first child is a girl and they want a boy next, the couple can do in vitro fertilization in the U.S. where they can select the gender.
Also, epidural painkillers are rare in China, but widely available in the U.S. As his marketing brochure puts it, it's already difficult to live as a woman. Why suffer this pain? In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
Coming up tomorrow on our morning show, it is Jobs Day Friday, gang. What we know about who is getting back into the labor market. According to the International Game Developers Association, just a bit more than 20% of the workforce in that industry is women. Less than 1% is black. That's all by way of introduction to today's installment of our series, My Economy, stories of people trying to make a go of it out there. This one from a game developer who decided to work outside the industry.
My name is Kat Small, and I am a product designer as well as a creative technologist who creates video games. I've always loved video games, and I have very, very fond memories of playing as a child. But as I got older, I wanted to start making my own, and my first game was actually a dress-up doll game that I made when I was around 10 years old. And I knew that that wasn't going to be enough for me. I really wanted to do more. So as I got older, I kept experimenting, and I found myself becoming really engaged with the process of understanding how to actually turn real-life events into logical sequences that people could play. I released Sweetheart in January of 2019. Sweetheart is what people call a visual novel. The goal behind Sweetheart was to convey what it's like to be someone like me in the United States, a black woman who works in technology. As you go throughout the day, Kara has a lot of different interactions that she experiences, and depending on those experiences, she either feels more positively or she starts to feel really negative. And at the end of the week, the hope is that you can have a positive week, which requires 5 good days. It's really challenging to get 5 positive days in a row, which is honestly quite accurate for me in real life, but things have gotten better lately. My whole concept behind game development is really trying to understand ways to communicate what it means to be a person to other people. I really aim to put people into my shoes, and experiences that are familiar to me, I want to convey them to other people as well. I've thought a lot about potentially being a game designer professionally, full-time. But unfortunately, I think the industry is not at a point where it can support someone like me. People get laid off all the time. It is a really stressful situation to be in when you can't find long-term full-time work. But that is something I've thought about a lot, and I hope that one day I will actually be able to do that.
Literally cannot do this series without your help and your stories. Tell us what your economy is like at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, in which Tim Cook shows he's got a bit of a sense of humor. Cook, of course, the CEO of Apple. He was at a White House thing yesterday, seated right next to the president when this happened.
You got to start doing it over here, and you really have. I mean, you've really put a big investment in our country. We appreciate it very much, Tim Apple.
So today, Tim Apple changed his name on his Twitter account to an Apple logo. I mean, props, right? All right, we got to go. Wall Street today, well, let's just say challenged, shall we? Amir Bibawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Heron Bekela, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is Deirdre Depke. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.